This is the guy.
Right, of course.
Dale.
After watching the episode, I'm like, we didn't have that love.
Mommy and Daddy.
I'm Holly Welcome. Combs. I'm not sure it's their favorite show of all
No,
time.
It's their favorite show. If they're here, it's their favorite show for sure.
Okay. All right.
And Daddy AF.
What's up?
Mustaches and puppies.
Here, mustache and toe. Ready to deep dive.
It's still there.
Yeah, see, she can't even see it. No, but when you do, dude, you can't.
I don't want to see it.
I'll show it to you. Well, I can't show it to you this week. I'm shaving.
Do not shave it. Oh, Do not shave it.
Okay. Cool.
Please tell him not to shave it.
You're shaving for the weekend?
Oh, yeah. Man.
Well, for today.
Oh.
Okay. Well, guys, this is the House of Hallowell, where we review and dive into your favorite show. Every episode, every detail, every cavity.
Well, not everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
Nope.
Yep.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah, we do.
Moving on.
No. Look at your view. Just, like, you can just tune out.
I could hang out here all day.
Yeah.
So what episode are we into today?
We're doing Dead Man Dating.
Yes. Dead Man Dating.
Yeah.
I told Drew this was my first of my favorites.
This was this was an incredible episode. It aired October 28th,
1998. You were 12.
I was still 18 at the time, and directed by Richard Compton. And this was by far and away, at least out of the first few that we've watched, my favorite one. It was so good.
It was the most Piperist of Piper.
Maybe that's
shows
why I loved it
so far. I think it's when they figured out I could cry on camera, and then it just never ended. It just never ended. Like, I never stopped crying the entire show.
You caught real feelings.
I did.
I know. I was like, I'm watching this, and I caught feelings for you guys. I was like,
as Leo, Leo
no,
was a little
Dale.
Jealous.
Dale wasn't even there yet. Dale's still in the attic.
Dale was jealous.
Flowers in the attic.
Dale's like in the attic, but for real, there was some gold. Like, you guys were amazing.
See,
for real,
chemistry.
You and John.
You John Cho, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, and you guys definitely had it.
It can't be manufactured.
There was some chemistry. Like, well, we're trying to manufacture something between the three of us.
There's got to be commitment. You got to commit to the moment. That,
you know what? Yes, commitment. Yes.
Was there a thought of keeping him around and having him be the boyfriend and be in and out after that? I mean, because you guys had so much chemistry.
Well, he was dead.
She has a ghostly boyfriend.
Buddy, she's moved on. Or he moved on. Like, he saw his dad. They had a handshake. They embraced.
Magic. It's freaking magic. If you watch the show.
True.
Can't date a dead guy.
Hello.
She tried.
Were you dead? You were a handyman.
Kind of dead.
Guys, we're jumping. You can't jump that. You can't jump that far ahead.
Oh, sorry, people. For those of you that haven't seen it yet. For those of you who haven't seen the show yet, no spoilers, please.
I haven't seen the show yet. This is my first time.
That's
true. I'd never seen that episode before.
It's really my favorite thing to watch the show with people who've never seen it before, and they're like, "What the F is this?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I just spent 8 years doing it. I just work here."
That's it.
I don't know.
Like, we're wheeling you out again for another 8 years. You're on autopilot at this point. There is something I need to address. And it's Andy's behavior is egregious at this point. He's a stage 4 stalker. It's not a good look to show up at people's houses unannounced, kids. Like, that's not a good look. Do not do that.
We discussed this. It was like before cell phone technology and such things.
Yeah, he keeps doing it though. In every ep. It's a real bad choice.
You know, just from an insider's point of view, I can tell you that we had limited locations. I mean, this is part of why I was really excited to do this episode, is they actually let us outside. They let us go to Chinatown.
Echo Park Lake.
Yeah, there was like a horse involved. There was, mm-hmm. There was real show type things. And I think there's this like miscommunication that people think like the more successful you get, like the more money you have to do the show, it's actually the opposite. They're like, oh, they're successful. They're going to stick around for a while. So we're going to shave your budget every year until you get efficient enough. And till by like season 8, we were inside the entire season. I don't think we went anywhere. We were not allowed to play outside.
Do you want to talk about it more? Because clearly no. It's...
Just, you know, from a production standpoint, you know, Andy.
Did that actually really happen? They kept shaving your budget every season?
Yeah. I think from year 4, it just went downhill every year.
Wow.
Yeah. And that, so when you have like lead actors making more and more, and then you have a smaller budget to do the rest of it, it's super counterintuitive. Not that I'm going to turn down a raise, but.
No.
I also didn't, you know, ask for like a ridiculous raise because I knew it would be taken out of the budget that was doing this.
Right. Well, this episode had, again, there was a surprise. You guys were planning a surprise party for Prue. But really, it was just you and Mark, like running around kind of playing detective. It was like moonlighting.
Thank
but there
you.
there was love. I'm telling you, I can't get over it. I was watching it. Did I maybe even get a little teary-eyed at the end? Like, you got me.
Better of.
Yeah, you got me. I was shocked. I'm like, there's no way I'm actually getting emotional about this episode. Like, there was just something really fucking great about it.
You know, at the funeral, it's real funny because, you know, we were still like struggling to find our footing. And at the funeral scene, they're shooting us all in a line, and we all know why they're shooting us in a line, because it's more efficient to get out of the location if the three of us stand facing the camera. And so you can see that like Shannon and Alyssa were not prepared for the emotion I was about to give. So literally, those are real moments. And I'm not sure I was prepared for it either, but it just came out. So I just went with it. And Alyssa's like, whoa. And she touches me and she's like, are you okay? And then I see Shannon go like this. Like, she's like, oh, we're doing this scene?
Oh, we're crying?
We're doing this today? Like, you can see her face like go, wait a minute. Oh, okay. Yes. We're bringing it today.
Amazing.
It was pretty funny. If you rewatch that scene, they're both like, shit. There she goes.
Was there anything?
The wheels coming off.
Did you know, like when you were shooting it, like were you aware of, you know, obviously as like you get scripts and we read scripts all the time, and some are immediately you can tell like, oh, this is going to be great off the, like, you know, on the page immediately.
Yeah, this one was good on the page immediately.
Yeah, you knew.
So, and that's, you know, that's what's funny about emotional scenes is that sometimes they can be super hard to do and, you know, the tears just won't come. And there's other, you know, scenes that are constructed accordingly and it just flows. It just happens in a real way. And then you got John. So that helps. It helps when your guest star is good.
But what's crazy is I think this was, and we'll ask him when he joins us, but I think it was what, his third or fourth job? Like he hadn't done anything.
I guess, I don't know. I mean, I didn't like sense he was green or anything.
No, no. Professional. But it was still very at the early stages of his career. Like,
oh yeah. Well, now he's a megastar.
Yeah. Yeah.
He like hasn't stopped working a day since that episode, which is probably why he never came back.
Just probably. Also, and he was dead. He was dead.
Yeah. Well, she had a thing for dead guys, like I said.
Yeah. Well.
Dude, when did you die? I mean, let's jump, I guess.
1941.
Like, when did you go from Dale the Handyman to dead?
Saving Private Leo. Is that when we find out mostly about... Oh, wait. We're skipping way
ahead. Way ahead.
Way ahead. It's many seasons.
Just before we have our boy come and join us, what about... Was there anything else? Like, I took copious notes... Again,
you have questions. You have all the questions.
Now, does Shannon actually hate birthday parties?
Like no. Shannon,
did they write that in? Like, oh, I hate them anyway, and don't blah blah blah. So was that something they wrote for her character?
Shannon likes birthday parties. She probably doesn't like. Well, she'll say she doesn't like surprise parties, but she does like to plan things. So. Right. Actually, she planned a surprise party for me with Alyssa, so she can't say that she hates it.
Like in real life? Like
my, yeah, I think it was like my 25th birthday they planned. And literally there was like the DP from Picket Fences. There was like people from deep in the Rolodex that they must have stolen. Like producers from Picket Fences. And I was just like, where did you find all these people?
How did you, do you like surprise parties?
No.
Not at all?
No, not at all. No. I mean, and this was like a day in your life from like the last 30 years, but I was only 25. It was literally everybody I'd known and then their mother.
And you were so bummed.
Wow. I was super overwhelmed. And it was at Alyssa's house. So it was just a grand old setup.
Sure.
Yeah.
BK, were you there?
I think I was drunk there. No, I don't.
He's
I don't
like,
know that
I don't
there.
Remember exactly whose birthday it was.
Yeah, it was there. It was a party, I tell you.
It was.
It did not get away. Let's to the notes.
Oh, okay, to the notes. Listen. This is what people want. They want the deep inside cuts. I want deep cuts.
All right. I think that was my last surprise birthday party ever. Don't get any ideas. Like, you guys are the worst.
No, this is a great thing.
I spent one birthday with you
guys. When is your birthday again? Oh, yeah.
December.
It's in
December. December.
And you had, like,
I think we should do a surprise party for her this year.
You had every con that we were at for, like, the month before and the month after sing happy birthday to me.
Yeah, we did do that.
That's a great, thing.
No, we did. We were in Paris.
I had a dinner party the other night, not here. I was at a party at a restaurant and I love dipping, going to the bathroom and telling the waiter, someone, probably the person who hates it the most, it's their birthday.
That's so wrong.
It's so great.
So unnecessary.
They're so bummed when the people come out and everyone starts singing and everyone's like looking around going, it's your birthday? I had no idea.
I think we did that to you a couple times, actually.
You have. It's a good prank. I'm into it.
Back to the notes. I have to say, I enjoyed this episode as well. And I think for me, it was the, as last episode with a couple episodes with Dad, and we showed the girls being more human. This was even a deeper dive into, like you said, Holly's emotion, who can always bring it. But it again added more humanistic element to the witches and showed that, the show itself was going to delve into real love and real emotions. And having not seen it before myself, it kind of, like you two, it's like, man, it's kind of really hooked me in. I was like, oh.
Well, it's like, episodes like that for sure that you realize very quickly why the show gained such a massive following early, right? It's episodes that there's always certain shows and specific episodes that hook you and you're like, oh, I'm in. I'm fully invested. And it's why Piper specifically, at least from my eyes, was a fan favorite from the outset, because there was such a level of like authenticity and humanity to it. Like,
she's,
I believed
human.
It. I was,
she's,
really into it.
She is human and needs to be loved.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Not
but
bad
I,
again.
I think John really brought it too, as far as being the innocent, the one needing saving and help. And, he brought a real human essence to it as well. That was, not only caring about himself and the destruction of creatures, but, him as an innocent cared about his mom, his family, the legacy, what was going on, and, the sadness of not being able to be with Piper and find that love. And it was kind of like the undercurrent, love that could never be kind of thing. And, life is too short. I can't wait to watch the next episode.
I don't think it's as good.
I'm going to tell you right now, my man, it's not as good. It's not as good at all. I have notes on it right here, actually.
Like I said, struggling to find our footing still. But I really did love John and his mom's relationship, because it's super hard to do any character development in like that. What is it really time out to? 44 minutes or something ridiculous like that?
42.
Okay, exactly. And so it's tough to, like, in that amount of time, show a family and their dynamic, and then, have horses and,
And also have this, like, the storyline with Phoebe who, by the way, one of my notes was, that's the first time, like episode four, she dons an outfit that kind of reminded me of I Dream of Phoebe a little bit, and starts you guys, it just like sets the table for the fits that you guys will be rocking for the next 8 years.
See, like I said, though, too, they let us outside. So we got to shoot that at the Hotel Roosevelt. Like, yeah. I can tell you everything about the locations. I can tell you, like, how the flowers smelled at the front door. But ask me other things, and I'm like, who, what, where? Ask Brian. I don't know.
Dale wasn't there yet.
Dale is still in the attic.
Dale is still in the attic.
Still in the attic.
Did we get a confirmation that it's she said Dale, not Leo?
No.
I need to go back and watch that.
We're going to have
maybe
to tweet at us.
Yeah, tweet at me.
Tweet at us.
I want to know.
Tweet at
But yeah, it's great.
Wait, do we
great.
Have a House of Hollowell Twitter yet? We did
yeah,
do
we do.
Such a thing.
Yeah, I got that. I got that. Let's see here. I just have, like, really my notes are just destroying Andy and his choices.
Poor Andy.
Also, he's married. He was married.
Oh.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, chunks up with that.
Everybody needs to get married the first time.
Oh, I haven't done that yet. Have you guys?
Yeah, I tried it.
Yeah.
I tried it.
Girls, he's, by the way, you're still single, right? You're looking for that special someone. I mean, like, you know me and a hard pivot. I love, like, do we turn this into a Brian? Let's find Brian a wife show.
Brian, are you going to get married again?
You know, it would have to be pretty special.
He's taking it seriously.
You know, I don't have anything on the docket at the moment. But,
well, you know, I like that we're announcing this then globally. This is a global news break. Brian does not have anyone on the docket presently and is looking and open for something special.
You know, someone that speaks four languages, lives in a castle.
At maybe has House of Hallowell on Twitter applications.
South of France.
George Clooney already married that person, so she's fairly taken.
There's got to be a princess somewhere.
Don't, okay, because then you're going to get underwear in the mail again.
Who loves Charmed and loves Leo.
That's right.
Buddy, I actually feel like this is a possibility, like a real one.
Okay.
Like, all jokes aside.
Well, I mean, marriage is...
Marriage.
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 Oof.
Princess Bride
it's
reference.
It's a big contract.
Why does it have to be? Can't you just be married outside and, like, you just pledge each other's love for each other?
We did that. You guys
there. Look at Holly. Look how happy she is. See that? Look at her face. That's happiness. Like, that's families. Marriage bliss. That's what I see.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Did you say it's a contract?
Yeah.
Hey,
is it
some
not?
People need contracts.
Oh,
it's
boy.
True.
Some people need to sign on the dotted line.
It's true. This is true.
Holly, do you recommend marriage?
Well, I keep doing it, so I must. Somebody asked me, when am I going to stop getting married? I was like, well, I guess when people stop asking me.
Okay. Yeah.
Quit asking me.
Is that all it took?
Bro, you blew it.
You know, I was going through a thing.
Oh, that's
true.
You were
going through a few things.
Yeah. A few things.
Yeah, I wasn't so much a keeper back then.
Bring home to mama.
No.
Oh, boy.
Dale is still finding himself.
Listen, the fact that Dale has an awareness, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. That means growth.
I would have kids again, but it all has to be right. And, you know, in this day and age, it's tough to find great people. So
it's good to be selective.
Yes, but you have to put yourself in situations where you could potentially find people in order to find someone. You know that, right?
One was looking for, right?
Yes, if one was actually looking for companionship
and love like that. Yes.
Dude, why don't you marry a golfer? That would be the greatest.
You find me a hot golfer, a chick that can play, that's got a little dough, and I don't have to freaking support her whole life. It'd be fantastic.
The list just got longer. Okay, there's selective, and then there's real picky.
Yeah, there's that was a your list just changed drastically.
Right. The requirements.
Or princess you moved to the that golfs that speaks four languages, right. Has a house in the south of France. Maybe okay. She's a two handicap, has a boat.
Oh, and a boat.
And a trust fund. Done.
So that's like probably I'm all four in. Different women, which explains the problem.
Yeah, and then all my friends would go, well, move to Palm Springs. There's
yeah,
plenty.
Bro, you moved yeah. to the wrong. Like, you should have moved to Malibu.
Yeah.
And that's, and like, yeah. just posted up somewhere and found
Grandma
someone.
Would hook me up. That'd be wow. great. I know.
Okay, so now we'd.
Yeah, so now please. That we've completely.
Thank you. Can we get off of this?
Trampled the, any version of true love happening. Any
yeah, I was about to say, and this concludes the episode of The House of Hallowell where we try to find Brian a wife. Well, our guest today is, I mean, I don't even know the best way to introduce him. This is one of my low-key favorite actors. I think he's so talented, and some of my favorite movies he's been a part of. He's John Cho. Also, yeah, I don't know. I'm botching this intro because I'm like, I'm thinking of all the things
so
in the movies.
Fabulous.
I kind of did a rewatchable this week, just catching a bunch of his films. But there was a film he did with Koganada called Columbus that if you guys haven't seen, it's a masterpiece of like reflection and coming to terms with like love and loss and relationship with parents, father specifically. It is so good.
We were lucky enough to get some really great actors like before they hit like superstardom.
Yeah.
So we were lucky to get him.
Yeah, for sure. John Cho, incredible actor, sweet man. Really excited to kind of talk to him about his time on the show, but also what he's up to now.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
What's going on?
Hi. Well, this is so great. Thanks for having me on.
Dude, thank you so much for being here. No, we're so stoked and grateful that you were able to kind of squeeze this in. I know you're super busy right now with your schedule.
You guys.
I keep telling the boys, I was like, he is not. Drew asked, like, why did he not come back? Why did we, like, the kids so great? Wasn't, why weren't you, like, moonlighting the whole time?
Yeah, I would have bought, I would have totally bought into that show. You guys do, like, a detective.
Hey, man. I'm right with you.
I told Drew, I was like, because he has not stopped working since the day he left the show. Every day since he's
well,
not stopped.
That's why I'm so thankful. It was, if there was a, I feel like there was an artistic launch to my career, and that was sort of it. I will say, I get asked about this show all the time, and it shocks me. I was on one episode, you know, but it's nothing like it. The legs on this show it's just so insane, and I'm so glad to be on this podcast to talk to you about it. Because I mean it's some kind of, it's magic, I guess. I mean, I'm just it has never relented. It has never, ever relented. And it holds such a special place in people's hearts. It's crazy.
Yeah, I told the boys, I was like, this was like the most Piper of Piperist episodes that we got to in the first season. It was my first favorite, for sure. It was definitely wow. When the producers figured out I could cry. And I said, but I, you know, having a good guest star that is as committed to the moment as you are is like such a huge necessity.
I was going to say the opposite, which is I was so felt so lucky to have you as my acting partner because I was very green. I didn't know what I was doing. And there's no way that I could have stumbled through that without someone of your caliber. And I was really, I was watching it and I was reminded of my impression when I got home that night, which is like, Holly is so simple. And I mean that as the highest compliment. Like it is, she's just saying these words and meaning them. And I can't believe how she can do this. And, you know, for me as a young actor, you're trying to push so much. And it was so interesting and instructive to watch you simply mean the words. I was struck by it then so deeply, and I was struck by it on the rewatch last night. It was kudos.
He's trying to make me cry again, and it's going to work.
Well, you guys both made us cry. When we rewatch it, we were kind of saying the same thing.
I can't believe I was crying.
You brought such a reality and so much love. You know, we just believed it. And I hadn't watched the show up to that point until I rewatched it. I'm like, oh, man, I want to kind of watch it again. Like, you know, just the whole world with you and your mother on the show and everything. And you know, the idea that you were losing life. You know, even you say you were green, but it was you brought it then. And I think the two of you kind of had it together. And I think that's what made it such a special episode.
It is kind of an enduring message, too. I mean, I was like looking at that going, I was watching it, thinking to myself, oh, that's pretty, it's worth remembering. Mm-hmm. Birthdays are important. Like smell the roses while you can. It's hitting me at a time, too, right. When I'm like, this is a good lesson. This is something to think about.
John, do you have kids now?
Yeah, I have a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old boy.
Oh, goodness.
9-year-old girl.
So I saw the trailer for Don't Make Me Go.
Yes. Which
looks hysterical, by the way. And I was watching it going, how is John old enough to like play the parent of a teenager? And then I was like, wait a minute. I have 4 teenagers.
Oh, my God.
4. So, it was still, though, like watching it, even though I think you're like a year older than me, that I was like, he's not old enough to play the dad of a teenager.
I will say, Holly, it is when you get that first dad role offered, you're like, what?
Me?
How dare you?
No, it's true. I took the mom role on Pretty Little Liars. Like, yeah. I was way too young to play her mom, but I was like, you know what? I'm choosing it. I am choosing this moment. It's not going to be like, I have to play the mom.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be the mom. It was sort of within my control.
Very good. Very good. Very smart.
Right. However you want to frame that.
Thank you. Yes. I'd rather have them say, you look too young to be her mom. And, oh, yeah, no, you can only play the mom.
That
I
is.
Like that.
Oh, my God. Smart.
Very smart.
Yep.
You're boxing with yourself. You're with your own mind. That's really good.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. You know, that's the trials and tribulations of an actor right there. Never read.
You were ready. Hey, so what? At what point in, like, where was this in your career trajectory? I know it was early stages. Like, how? Yeah. Like, where were we?
Well, so what year was it? 1998. So
I was 18.
I think I'd come down to LA in 96, and I'd done some theater. I'd started acting in college. Sort of fell into it. And then, so I was doing mostly theater, local theater, and doing one line parts when I could. So this was my first, like, you know, work more than one day role. Oh, wow. I'll tell you one story. One was the big takeaway at the time was, I took home a check that was like slightly above $5,000. And which was big money, and I was planning a very extravagant dinner, and I think the day the check arrived, I saw my Visa bill, and I had had a few years of not being able to pay that off, you know, doing the minimum, and it just wouldn't go away. And now I think that the Visa bill was like almost exactly my check amount. It was that I couldn't get rid of, so I paid off my credit card that day, didn't go to dinner, and I've never been in debt since.
That's
incredible.
That is incredible.
But wow. The other thing I'll say is it was my introduction into being a professional. Like, that was the first time I really watched you guys, learned what casts do, you know, how you take care of one another. And that was really eye-opening to me, how you were there for me, how the three of you were there for me, and how you took care of one another. I was watching that, and I thought, okay, this is how it's supposed to be done. And I've taken that forward. I very clearly remember, I have a terrible memory, but this is one of the things I remember, is that last shot at Echo Park at the funeral. Mm-hmm. And you guys were wrapped, is my recollection. And you stayed for my off camera. And I remember, I didn't know how this went.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, for eyeline, sometimes you have to, you know, they'll be sitting, you might be standing, you know, 3 feet apart from one another. But sometimes for the over the shoulder, you have to scrunch up, you know, to make those eyelines really close to one another. And you guys scrunched next to each other for my off camera. And I was like, they're wrapped and they're all like giving me energy, making sure that I'm connected to them. And off camera is something I take a lot of pride in today as a professional. When somebody needs me, if an AD has sent me to my trailer mm-hmm. for someone else's coverage, I storm back.
Yeah.
I say, you do not do this without me. And take that pink mark off that C-stand. My head's going to be there.
Yeah.
And I force my way into those situations.
Yeah. I mean, they don't like it for production scheduling, you know, wise. They try to get rid of you. They try to wrap you so they can bring you in earlier the next day.
Yes.
But, you know, half of acting is reacting. And if you can't be there for the person on the other side, what's the point? You know,
I yeah. often think of you guys when I'm doing off camera. Can you believe it? I have that image flashes into my head.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of, you know, the show, of course, was 8 years long. And a lot of people like to talk about how the girls didn't get along or how they, you know, had their differences towards the end, which anybody would in those conditions after 8 years. But not a lot of people know like this kind of stuff where we were super like a band of brothers and we were really all in our respective ways trying to make it a good show, definitely in the beginning and definitely at this point. And they were both, you know, very much professionals and dedicated to what they were doing at that point.
I will attest to that. I saw that very clearly, very up close, and it was support, personal and professional support that I witnessed that day or that week. It was really, really quite moving. And it's like something I chase in casts, you know, like, you know, it's just things don't work when you don't have that, you know? And so it's so important to, I don't know how it gets done. I think like, you know, my theory is there's the center spoke and that's usually the director and that we all are kind of offshoots of that director's personality and we're connected through that person usually. But when it works, it's so good. It's sublime when you have that kind of intimacy with the cast. And I saw it that week.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, there's that famous, that reminds me of that famous story about Tom Hanks on, what was it? The Green Mile. Mm. And they had done his coverage in the cell, or it was, I forgot who he was acting opposite of, but basically they did him first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And by, I think 12, 13 hours later, they were doing the reverse of that shot. And the actor who was talking about it, man, I forgot who it was, but he the first thing he says is like, in walks Tom Hanks, like to do reverse coverage. He had wrapped like 12 hours earlier and it was such a big thing for him because, and Tom had said, well, of course I'm going to be here. Like your reaction to me is going to be much different than to a pink, you know, X on a C-stand or a stand-in. And so that level of professionalism, I think like one of the things that probably people don't realize is like how important it is to constantly be present and give that kind of the same level of emotion support to your scene partner, because it's only going to ultimately lift up the piece or the scene even more. So
I have a similar story, which was, I had one scene in a Chris Rock movie. Might've been the gig after this, but he was wrapped. He was in the car. He was driving away from set, but hadn't gotten very far. They realized they needed him. I'm struggling to remember whether it was for my off camera or an additional shot. But he turned the car around. Everyone says, oh, sorry about that. Thank you very much. And I said, thank you so much for coming back. Oh, my God. And he said something to the effect of, it's no sweat. If this movie sucks, it's on me. They're going to say I suck. I'm coming back for me, man. Which there's some truth to that as well.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's okay. Because high tide rises all ships.
Yeah.
Right? I have to throw in, Holly now lives across from this beautiful bay. And so I'm trying to throw in as many nautical references as I possibly can.
I appreciate that.
To me, I want you to feel seen.
I'm very jealous.
Yeah, well, you should flip. Show John your view.
No, I tried to retire quietly and Drew was just not having it, basically.
I take full responsibility for this and you'll be all right.
Thanks.
Look how much fun you're having.
Uh-huh.
Look how smitten you are. It's so cute. John, I know this is, I'm deviating a little bit from Charm, but I was just telling Holly and Brian how much I absolutely loved Columbus.
Oh, thanks.
Like Coconut is an incredible filmmaker, storyteller, but your performance in that was, dude, it blew my mind. It was so subtle
beautiful.
And there was so many textures and layers to what you were going through and your dynamic with
Haley Lou Richardson.
Yeah, Haley Lou Richardson, who was amazing as well. Like, dude, it got me. It was phenomenal.
Oh, thanks. That was a really special movie. Also, for a lot of reasons, but one of them is like, I've never been associated with a place. You know what I mean? Like that it's a movie that takes place in one town. And I don't know why that is kind of special to me, but they will always be able to say Columbus, the movie shot here, and I can always go there. And I guess I imagine retiring there and becoming mayor. It's really cool. To have a project that is just very specific to a single town.
Right on. Was Coconut awesome to work with?
Yes. Just as an example, I remember doing one scene with Parker Posey. It was a very difficult scene. The text was difficult. There were so many. Oh, it's one of those where like you're never saying the thing you want to say for each line. It was all smoke and mirrors. Each line was a lie or something like that. It was very difficult figuring out what the beats were. It took a long time. But his coverage was like, we were doing the scene and there was a mirror in the background so you could see our faces and the back of our heads. But it was a wide and it took a long time to get through it. And by the time we had finished that angle and we were emotionally exhausted. And he says, you know, I think I really like this shot. I think I'm going to use it. Would you like to move in for coverage? And I said, I looked at Parker and I said, I'm good if you are, because that was tough. And this is an amazing frame you've got going. And he said, cool. Don't need to do it. Let's go home. And it is a kind of, it was his first feature. There's a boldness to, I hesitate to call it ignorance, but he was just saying, I'm feeling something. I'm committed. Let's move on. And it was a very different way to work, especially, you know, coming back into TV world, there's so much sort of, corporate coverage. You know, they have a list and you spend a lot of the day doing stuff, just checking boxes, you know, crossing things off a list. And it was very interesting to work with someone who was like, I feel this, I'm, and that's what we're doing.
Mm. I love that. Yeah, the whole kind of guy.
The whole movie plays almost in these like giant, massive wides. And like very rarely did he cut in for coverage, and then he'll cut back out if he cuts in for a second. It was just such bold filmmaking.
Well, that's very like old school. Like when I did my first show at 19 at Picket Fences, it was all wide shots. It was like doing a play, and you had to be on your beats. You had to be on your mark. You had to, the timing with the other actors had to be right. And they would only punch in for close-ups for something really important or poignant.
And by the way, when they do that, the poignant moment lands harder, I think.
Yeah, it was, you know, when 24 happened, you know, that's when all the extreme close-ups forever just started going and going. It was a different, it was super, you know, new at the time and exciting, but it worked for 24, not necessarily like
for everything. Not necessarily for Modern Family or, you know.
But
there's something what I love about, you know, working in wider frames that are still, it is like, I consider that like whatever the camera is seeing is the proscenium. And then like you can work out blocking with your director. And I love blocking so much because it makes acting easier for me. Like you turn around and say something or move across the room and it you know, provides impulses. And like having this in your face the whole time and having to generate all the changes with the camera a foot from your face, that's tougher. And so I find it easier to move, pick something up, turn around, go to the window, you know, it informs everything. So that was, it was a real pleasure working in that kind of style for sure.
Yeah, that's totally me too, because I hate rehearsing. Despite contrary to popular belief, I hate listening to myself, the sound of my voice. Yeah. So I don't really want to say the lines a million times, but you know, a mark, a prop, a turn, that makes me, it's easier to remember what I'm going to do and why. And so blocking is, I think, is super important, but bringing the emotion to rehearsal and the words to rehearsal and hearing myself talk again and again, again, like that, I don't want.
What was that like on Charmed? Like bringing it back to like early days Charmed, was it more rehearsal blocking based? Like where do you guys remember what that process was like?
Gosh. Or was it? In the beginning, there was a lot of rehearsal, you know, and towards the end, we tried to get more efficient. And, you know, if we were in makeup a long time, they would start blocking with our stand-ins. And I would be like, wait, no, because it was part of my process where I was like, it just helps me remember what I'm going to do better. Like, I definitely didn't want to like go over my lines 50 times anymore, because when you're in that kind of cycle of day in and day out, it's kind of like hamster on a wheel sort of machine. So unless you have like certain movements and certain sets and certain things, you know, for me, it's very visual. Like for me, I don't need to hear it, but I need to either see it or write it down for me to really be paying attention. So that's what I needed stuff.
It's a bummer that we haven't worked together since, because that's what it's like this.
I know. Well,
guys, I'm buying it. I'm here for it. Whatever you're ready to dive back in.
Here for it.
I'm so here for it. I will trumpet this show.
Okay. Whatever it is. You start writing now, Drew. Give me a couple months to come off the island.
Okay.
I'll get there. Hey, you know what? Where I live now is much closer to Vancouver, but y'all stopped shooting in Vancouver and now you want to go to New Orleans, Atlanta.
Why are you making me responsible for where people are shooting? It's not my fault.
Things now. You're like a creator. You're a creator.
Yeah, I'm creating. I'm creating content.
It's funny. Well, I don't know why I was thinking about this, but I was the other day in the car, I was thinking, I'm really glad I survived. I was reflecting that I was really thankful that my career survived the change in the television era, because it kind of coincided with my having kids. And that was when, you know, most TV shows when I started, obviously shot in Los Angeles, and then it started going to Toronto and Vancouver, which seemed to be tremendously far away, but now I would take it in an instant.
Right.
And then it started getting crazier and crazier. And I was always like, but what about the kids?
Yeah.
What is this doing to my family? They're either coming out with me and I'm uprooting them from their lives, their loved ones, their friends and family. or we're apart and they're growing up without a dad. So that was very difficult to navigate for a long time. And it's not much easier now, but, you know, I don't have to take as many jobs. Oh, there are also like, you know, limited series, so that the terms are a little better sometimes.
Right.
But there was a good like 10 years where I was like, how am I going to survive not taking a series in Louisiana or Detroit?
Yeah.
Did you come up with it? Come up with a formula?
You just don't open the script. And then you don't know what you're missing. Really. One came across my desk that would have been in New Orleans. And I was just like, there's just no way. I have four teenagers. There's just no way. So you don't open it. And then John Kretschmer tells you it was picked up.
Oh, that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need... Ollie, I need you in a very small jar on my desk telling me wise things. So open the jar.
I think we could all use a Holly jar.
Oh, no.
Yes. Holly, I think the reason my personal, I have no idea how this ranks for Charmed fans, but I think it's special because we couldn't touch each other. Because of that, that's so romantic and so it speaks to people. Maybe it's the human condition or something. I don't know. But you know, people say, I wish you could come back. I'm like, I'm not sure I should have. I think that's why it's special that we couldn't, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Truly. And then, you know, I married this guy, so. Right.
Oh, wait.
That's the guy who replaced guy. You. This is the guy.
Right, of course.
Dale.
After watching the episode, I'm like, we didn't have that love.
No, you definitely did not.
What?
I'm sorry. You missed my birthday, dude. I'm not voting for you.
Justified. No. I was like, ugh. I never touched her like, oh, can you feel my hand? I'm like,
you should have
watched like love. Like, they had passion. I'm like,
that was real.
You
guys were already married like 20 years. You're like the old married couple.
No, I'm crying, but for different reasons.
It's true.
You really should have watched this episode.
When I saw you guys do that and you put the hand there, you know, close your eyes, you can feel me. It was like,
it's a lesson.
I felt it with you guys. And I was like,
by the way, you guys, for real, that was so, it could have, you know, in moments like that, it can go one of two ways, right? And it clearly landed in a very real, heavy way where we're all going, oh, like it landed. And that's a testament to both of your talents and the way played it and fully committed. And it was beautiful, truly. I really wish Brian and Holly had that as my parents. They didn't. And this is why I turned out the way I am.
We admit that to everybody. We've been crashing everybody's party with our chemistry since day one. We're like, listen, we were friends. It was weird. His wife was mad at me. It was weird.
What?
Yeah, in real life.
Oh, yes.
Real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, your ex-wife thought we had a lot of chemistry, BK.
Clearly, she didn't see Dead Man Dating.
She did.
That's real chemistry.
A lot better.
That's real chemistry. She's like, we're fine.
They should have brought that man John. I'm working, babe. Like, wow.
What's it like? I'm one of those people that deletes the memory file as soon as I finish a job. Mm-hmm. What is it like to go back and meditate on something you did? You know, because it does sort of go into the air for me. It goes out of psychological necessity, really.
Yeah,
you know,
it goes into the archives for sure. There's like weird things. I was telling them earlier that I remember, like, I can tell you anything about a location. I can tell you what the flowers smelled like at the front door. But as far as like what I'm doing and the inner workings, there's just, you do kind of compartmentalize it and just see you later. File that away.
I always remember temperatures.
Temperatures. Yeah, totally.
I was like, hot ass day. That was freezing.
Sense memory. Yeah,
or crew members or some food or something.
Yeah.
For me, smell it's that. Wine. I remember wine.
Did you guys do a table read at that point? I know Charmed had started the couple, but
I don't recall that.
Gone out.
No, we weren't.
So three or four, huh?
We literally were trying to like see how fast we could finish episodes because we were struggling with the special effects all being new and, you know, doing five wardrobe changes, full hair and makeup in a day and, you know, stunts. So it was literally just trying to make it to the finish line every day. So there was no time for table reads. There was no time for words.
It almost seems illogical that we were doing that television was produced at that pace.
Yeah.
Like 22 episodes. And, you know, now I've, even with a 10 episode season, I'm like in the middle of it around six or seven, I go, what the fuck are we doing? what happened this season? You know what I mean?
Right.
But 22, that pace is that'll break you.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Did a couple of, you know, it is definitely a young man's game for sure. There's no way I could do it now, you know, at 25, I think I was 25 to 33. Yeah, on the show. So the 20s were good, you know, and I could hit the ground a lot and keep running, literally. But yeah, after 30, it was kind of like torturous. And then at 30, I had my first son. So he was coming to set with me.
Yeah.
And it changes everything. It made it more interesting in a lot of ways. But at the same time, it's a young man's game for sure.
Yeah.
That's why they trade us in and put us out to pasture.
By your choice, you could be in New Orleans right now. You could be in New Orleans right now.
Probably playing someone's mom too.
Probably, but that you embrace.
I'm playing Jensen's mom. Just kidding.
John, what are you shooting right now?
I'm on a TV show in Los Angeles.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Can we talk about it? Has it come out?
Yes. It was announced. It's the second season of a murder mystery show called The After Party. It's for Apple.
The Apple show.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. This show is amazing. Yeah. If you guys haven't really seen it, it's such a smart take on genre play.
Yeah, so it's basically a Rashomon situation where people, or Clue, where people, and then what the thing that they're doing is everyone, as they're recounting their memories of the night, each person's memory is a different genre of film.
Oh.
So, you know, some people are seeing it as an epic romance, and other people are seeing theirs as some action movie. And so, and other people are, it's like a Hitchcock film. And so it's, or a musical, so all the visual styles are different.
That's like all those things are every aspect of my daily life in one day. So that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun. Can you tell us what your genre is?
I can't.
That's
I can't.
That's a clue.
That's a secret. But I will say,
ask the question.
It kind of came from Chris Miller is the executive producer. And his son and my son go to the same school, and they had done this murder mystery at school together. And so he emailed me and said, I think this would be fun if we did what our sons are doing.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was real cute. Yeah. It was kismet, I guess.
Oh, totally.
It's cool.
Well, you said in the author's note, phenomenal book, by the way, Troublemaker.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God. Thank you.
Yeah, man. I finished it last night. I kind of power read it this last week. And in the author's note at the end, you were saying that you had originally kind of ventured out to make like a mystery, like a, right? And so the fact that you're getting to do that now.
Yeah.
But are you going to, I'm assuming you're going to turn it into a movie or a miniseries, right? At some point, Troublemaker?
I think it might happen. Cool? Yeah. Yes. yeah, it'd be cool. We're talking to somebody about it and trying to get it lined up.
You have any interest in directing? Like, would that be something you would want to direct?
Yeah, I think I'm ready to give it a shot. I'll see what happens. You know what, I guess over the years I've thought of a lot of things, you know, as an actor, you go, oh, if I were in charge, I would do that, you know. Right. And I guess this will be my chance to to put my money where my mouth is.
Well, here's the thing that I always notice. So if you walk into a set and you picture the scene differently than how it's being blocked out, that's probably when you're ready to direct. When you're like, oh, wait a minute, I saw this differently. I mean, that's all it is, you know, and then your crew supports you. If you have a good crew and a good camera crew, then they support you through it.
Yeah.
Talking from my armchair and never attempted to do it.
You ever listen, think this is why I'm going to put you in the jar on my desk whenever I have a critical question.
Holly? HMC, was that something you thought of doing ever? Because your brain works that way.
It does work that way. I preferred to be behind the scenes and be like producer type, you know, questions and answers, as opposed to like, you know, like John said, like the center of the spoke, like the center of all the questions and all the responsibility and all the things.
Here's one fix I'd do. I have one. I wonder if you guys think the same. I've said it's really a mistake to have the AD do off camera for a phone call. You know? I said, why don't we just get somebody from Cal State LA, an acting student, you know, give them credits so that you guys don't have to spend any more money. That person's just with us and does all off camera. It becomes a voice of the set and not of what, to me, it's like the AD is over there and it's really kind of distracting to have the voice who says action and stuff.
And after a while, you have personal relationships with them. And I don't know about other sets, but our first ADs were pretty funny. And so half the time I would end up laughing or saying some fucked up shit to them. And, you know, it costs time and money.
Yeah. Producer brain.
From my producer chair.
For me, I always try to actually have the person, like if it's a phone call, like, let's just call them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot
of
times now you're just. Yeah,
but anytime an AD reads too, it's just, it's so bad.
It's amazing for comedy.
Better off with the tape on a C stand.
Yeah. Listen.
Like tempt me. You don't want to tempt me to fool around because that'll happen.
Or it's just even this. I don't know why the script supervisor's on book to me, because it's like,
right,
that woman has so much to do, and then when you say a line, she has to put the ruler down.
But everything.
whoa. There's that moment that's critical. That time. Then the line really goes.
Truly.
I'm not mad at this idea. This is not a bad idea. Like just someone who is with the cast at all time, like with the crew. It's like another crew member.
Yes.
Who is acting as the voice, line read. Like if someone drops a line, it's everything off camera.
There you go.
Holly, are you on board with this?
How do I get into that union?
Yeah. I'm telling you,
I'm an off-camera specialist.
The man has not stopped working for a day. Not a day.
Yeah, literally. You just don't ever stop working.
Like a part of that day. But yeah.
Holly, I will accept that compliment because it is like the biggest triumph is not like the heights you reach, but to me, I look back and I go, shit, I'm still standing. It's it's really nuts. Cause you know, even at that time when we shot the show, my realistic career goal was, oh, it'd be cool if I turned 40, if I didn't have a second job, if I wasn't waiting tables, I was like, that to me would be amazing. Cause you know, looking around at your friend group, the grind is, it's tough.
It is. It's tough to navigate the lows. And that's the part where people kind of go off the rails, you know, and get really down on themselves. And, you know, the highs are the highs and the lowest of the lows. So it's tough. It's tough to be a working actor for, you know, decades. To see the success, but don't understand that there can be really low and dark times.
Well, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things. Like if you have a lull, that's why, you know, it's best if you get some momentum going when in your 20s, that's a real gift to yourself, because if you don't have that momentum, and let's say, I mean, this is getting into the weeds, but you get pregnant and you're not making enough for the insurance, to clear the insurance threshold. That's the kind of thing that makes people quit the industry entirely. That they leave and they go, I can't do this. I've got a kid, or, you know, I've got a condition. I've got a little thing, and this is, I got to make the insurance and I can't risk it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's why if you get a little bit of vroom vroom, you know, from 20 to 27 or something like that, that's so useful. But it's tough.
Wait, at what age? So you went to school in Berkeley, is that correct? And you started doing plays and stuff. So at what point in there did you decide or say, you know what, I'm going to try Hollywood? And this is, I don't know if at that point, even when you did the show, it was a life goal to work through your 40s, or when did you really catch that bug and say to yourself, you know what, I think I'd like to do this. This is my thing. I'm good at it, type of thing.
I'll be honest. I think I was very afraid to say I wanted to do this for a living. And so I kind of told myself, just go down to LA, give it a year, give it 2 years, see what happens. Who knows? But so I had done this. I was doing school plays. I'd done a few school plays and I thought, this is really fun. And then there was a play that needed our university amphitheater because it was such a big production. And the school said, we'll let you rent this auditorium for your professional play, but in return, you have to cast like 3 or 4 students. You have to use these, or two crew, two cast members or something. And so that's how I got into a professional play, was basically blackmail from the school. And during that show is when I first met Asian American actors who I didn't even really think were out there. I think in my mind, I saw them on TV once in a while, but I thought they're like, maybe they're people off the street that they just, you know, put into the show or something. And it was seeing them, meeting them that I went and see how they were professionals. That was really the key for me, to see how they seriously took their work. And I said, oh, that's like a discipline. I didn't think of it as a discipline. I thought it was a lark, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I saw the discipline, I saw the work, I said, that's very interesting to me. And so I came down to LA after graduation and gave it a shot. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
And he's still working every day.
In LA, Holly.
I know. Wow. Really. That is the unicorn.
It really is.
Sean, you are the unicorn. Yeah. That's your new moniker.
I'll take it. I'll take it,
man.
Unicorn.
Own it. Own it. Own it. Own it. It's awesome.
Thank you so much, Sean. It was good to see you.
This has been so special for me. I'm so thankful to talk to you guys. I'm thankful to celebrate that episode that was so important for me as a baby.
For a baby.
I love it. Babies. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. Same such here. A fan of you and your work, and thank you for sharing your stories and just being so open and honest and cool.
Ah, man, this is awesome.
Thank you. Unicorn, everyone.
There he is.
Holly, the Seattle situation, I'm getting pretty jealous.
I know. Well, wait,
show him the view. Flip the camera. Show him your harbor. It's real magical.
You don't need to bully her. Don't bully her.
Sheer pressure.
She needs it.
All right, man.
That's amazing. Best of luck. And can't wait to see what you're doing next.
Thank you.
Hey, take some notes.
Yeah. He's been taking notes all the time.
Bye. Holly in the jar. That's my big
there
move.
You go. I'll okay. be there.
All right. Bye.
John is like, what a special man, beautiful soul. Of course he's continuing to work. Like, he's a legend.
Like I said, my first favorite. Sorry, BK.
I wasn't there yet. I was in the
He was in the attic.
Yeah.
You were just thought in the attic.
Sorry.
Well,
he's amazing.
Yeah,
it's really great energy. I love it.
Yeah.
Motivating.
you really got to watch. You should see some of those films if you haven't seen his work recently.
Absolutely. I'm going to dig in.
He's so good. Not a false moment, truly.
Like what he said about Holly as well, just so simple and meaning what she said. And you know, when people ask me about who was my favorite to work with, and I always say Holly, and it's kind of the same thing. She's just the most real. And, you know, to know that he picked up on that and has tried to take that forward in his other work, I think is, you know, something I've tried to do as well. And it just, it's a testament to Holly and, you know, John, of course, who picked it up and has carried it on.
Is the deal. Well, I think it just came organically from me trying to make people feel comfortable. And then once you do that and, you know, you're just talking and you're just, you know, having normal real life conversations about, you know, dragons and demons, then it seems just fine.
But, you know, straight up, to kind of reiterate what BK and John have said, like, you were by far and away the easiest, kindest, and most present person that I worked with. Like, I came on set and you, before I, no, we'll get there.
But we'll get to that moment.
Yeah, we will get to that. Man, Jesus.
There's some hazing involved.
Yeah, the hazing. It is a miracle. Let's put it this way. It is a miracle we are here right now. But Holly, you were... To kind of back up what they both said, like, I remember just being on set with you, even first day, you were so kind, loving, and present and giving off camera for me.
I had to be present. You had 20 questions.
Yeah, because I care.
And I had to keep you away from the directors. I was like, don't talk to them. Don't talk to them. Don't. You were so eager to do well.
We are jumping.
Oh, sorry.
5 seasons ahead. I was just complimenting you, telling you, like, you were so beautiful in your groundedness in your performances. And you really did always give the most beautiful off camera. And you always made everyone that you worked with feel like seen and important. And so that was a big time. That was a, you know, and the fact that John recognizes it, BK just acknowledged it as well. Like, take the compliment. You were amazing. You're an amazing actress to work opposite of.
You mean be present right now?
No, I know you have to go. All right, guys. This concludes another episode of The House of Hallowell. Thank you to all our Patreon members.
See y'all. Can't wait to talk about episode 5, season 1.
I cannot wait.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of 1. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.